This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. If you listened last week, you heard that fabulous voice that just introduced me, Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set. He was my guest to talk about progressive swinging. And then he hit me up on Twitter later and said, I think we need to re-record your opening. And I said, I think I need a new theme song. My God, it sounds, I thought it sounded campy and now it just sounds porny. So I'm on the lookout for a theme song for all you musicians out there. And then Cooper has generously agreed to re-record the opening so we could have like a fun new opening. Wouldn't that be good? Just something to think on. We are live today, so if you have some thoughts about my opening or about today's guest or topic, you can give us a call at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. And remember, if you call in and I take your question on the air, or if you write in and I read your question on the air, you will win a prize from Sportsheets. And that's coming up in the final segment of the show, the Ask Tristan segment, which our guest is going to stick around. So it's going to be Ask Tristan and guest. Let me tell you who she is, because Susie Bright says about this person that she is simply one of the most important writers, editors, and innovators in contemporary American erotic literature. And Susie Bright, as you know, does not fuck around. Cecilia Tan's books often explore sex, sensuality, and sexuality, including the books Black Feathers, White Flames, Edge Plays, The Prince's Boy, The Hot Streak, and the BDSM romance novel trilogy Struck by Lightning, which includes Slow Surrender, Slow Seduction, and Slow Satisfaction. Slow Surrender won the RT Reviewer's Choice Award in Erotic Romance. Cecilia's short stories have appeared in Ms. Magazine, Nerve, Best American Erotica, Asimov Science Fiction, and tons of other places. She was inducted into the Saints and Sinners Hall of Fame for GLBT writers in 2010 and received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Leather Association in 2004. We are going to talk about kinky romance tonight, people. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Cecilia.
Thank you so much.
So one reviewer said about this trilogy that you wrote, the Struck by Lightning trilogy, if ever there was a thinking woman's erotica, this is it. And I definitely agree. I don't want to give too much away if people haven't read it, but there is this mysterious and guarded, multi-talented rich guy, and this grad student who has not yet been sexually awakened, but she's almost going to be. And they both dive headfirst into this very intense connection with dominance and submission and kinky sex and lots of orgasms. And so the comparisons to 50 Shades of Grey are kind of right there from page one.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
However, this is actually way, way better than 50 Shades of Grey. And for so many reasons, which I will, like, you know, blather on about. But I guess I want you to first weigh in on your opinion of 50 Shades, since that's what people are going to compare it to.
Oh, definitely. I wrote these books knowing that a huge portion of the readership would have already read 50 Shades, whether they loved it or hated it, before reading my books. So there's a whole category, essentially, of publishing now that is, if you've read 50 Shades of Grey, you might also like blank, you know, right. And I don't just mean like on the like online selling sites. I mean, you go into some bookstores and there's a table with a sign that says, if you liked, you might also like, you know, mm-hmm. Kind of a thing. So I said, all right, I've got to accept that everyone's going to have read this in the same way that if, I don't know, I went out to write a great American novel about whale hunting, of course you would expect it to be packed with references to Moby Dick or something, right? So I was like, I have to acknowledge that that's where this is coming from, but then I'm going to take it in some really different directions. And, you know, I had some arguments with things that go on in 50 Shades of Grey, including things like, you know, okay, a lot of people are like, oh, he's just a stalker, he's this, he's that. And I'm like, okay, look, there's a long history of guys in romance novels being like stalkers, and yet they're fantasy material for women. Do not denigrate the fact that women have fantasies about stalkers, okay? That doesn't mean they want real stalkers or that they, you know, any of that kind of thing, right? So,
okay, but this stalker, this is where I'm going to jump in and start showing you the differences. This stalker does not write really misleading, confusing, obtuse emails to the heroine.
True.
He actually is a pretty good communicator, yes. And is pretty clear about himself and what he wants. Mm-hmm. So right, there's exactly. One difference. I mean,
yeah. It's a huge difference. I mean, my point was, you know, among the things that kind of irked me about 50 Shades of Grey, okay, he's got the Red Room of Pain, but they actually don't spend very much time in there.
No.
And then they spend less and less and less time in there as time goes on in the series. And like they do less and less kink rather than more and more. And, you know, my real life experience, certainly, and most of the people I know in the scene, are the more trust you build up between you and your partner, the more kink you do, not the less.
Yeah, the more things you want to try, the more places you'll go. Absolutely. Right,
exactly,
absolutely.
Exactly. So I said, if this is going to be, you know, an erotic exploration, you know, book, it should go further and further, not pull back, you know, as it goes along. So, you know, I don't know. I felt like ultimately 50 Shades of Grey, my biggest problem with 50 Shades of Grey is actually it was like false advertising. You know, so many people just heard, oh, there's this really kinky book, and they went out and bought it, and then they're really disappointed. They're just like, I don't know, but you know, a lot of them get to the end of the first volume and they're just like, is it worth picking up books 2 and 3, you know? So
right.
I said, all right, my book is the book that is for all the people who were disappointed by that, but who clearly want, that's what I'm giving them, what they thought they were going to get, you know?
Right. So, in a much better package, and it's much better written. I mean, we have to say that first of all, is that a much better writer than E.L. James. People don't disagree with me on this. And you're just, I mean, quite frankly, you're a better storyteller.
Well, and I've been writing about BDSM for over 20 years. You know, this was,
right,
this
exactly.
was my first rodeo. This was not my first rodeo. You
right.
know,
and so for people who didn't know about you before this series, like it may seem like, who's Cecilia Chan? Did she jump on the 50 Shades bandwagon?
Right, exactly.
But actually, you kind of like built that bandwagon
yeah.
a really long time ago. You run Circlet Press, which is one of the longest running indie presses that publishes erotica. True. So you've been able to sit back and see in some ways just how much these genres of both BDSM fiction and BDSM erotica and romance have changed in these 20 years. I mean, what is most noticeable to you about where we are right now with erotic writing?
By far, the hugest difference between now and, say, the early 90s when I got started is that the assumption in the early 90s was that all erotic anything was for men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no sort of female-centric erotica movement yet, you know, and that was when it happened. And with things like the Herotica series from Down There Press, which was Good Vibrations publishing arm, and, you know, just a lot of people, I don't know if I say I built that bandwagon, but I bushwhacked the territory that the road went through, that the bandwagon then was
part of the pioneering.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. It's like, yeah. And then, you know, we built the log cabins along the way. Yeah, exactly. It's sort of, and I was so young. I mean, at that time I was fresh out of college, and it was I basically didn't know any better. I was like, what do you mean there's not erotica by women for women? That's ridiculous. You know, just okay, I can't, someone want, no one will publish this. I'll publish it myself. I mean, that was sort of just the, I don't know, the, and that was the ethos of the time too. It was a very DIY kind of time, sort of post-punk era. So, you know, of course it made total sense that we were just going to start our own companies and, you know, the way that lesbian and gay publishing did in the '70s, you know, and mainstream publishers were like, well, we can't, you know, touch you in a 10-foot pole. It's like, okay, well, now I'm the new can't be touched with a 10-foot pole. And the result is that now I think when people say erotica, instantly people think of female-centered, female-written for women. You know, they've come to understand in the retail marketplace that it's the female consumer, first of all, who buys the most books mm-hmm. and who spends the most time reading books and who, you know, I mean, even online and, you know, it's just even the worlds of, you know, free erotica on the internet are largely written by women, read by women, you know, which isn't to say that men can't be parts of those communities and, you know, so forth and so on, but it's driven from that sort of female side of things. And just fascinating to me that now here we are like a generation later and it's the assumed norm, which is exactly what I wanted.
And so that must feel good. I mean, but is there a part of you that feels like, wait a second, now we have all of these kind of imitators?
Well, yeah. But I mean, in the same way, I don't know. I think it's kind of like the way it works with gourmet food. You know, someone starts a trend, you know, their, I don't know, high-end steakhouse or, you know, whatever. And then the next thing you know, there's a sort of an ever-paling set of knockoffs that come down to, you know, the drive-through chains. You know, okay, we're going to introduce raspberry chipotle as the hip new thing, you know, whatever. And now it's like, you can get a raspberry chipotle bagel at, you know, finagle a bagel or whatever. I mean, you know, that kind of a thing where it just, things just propagate outward forever. You know, what's the hip thing that, you know, David Chang or Grant Achatz is going to invent. And then, you know, 15 years from now, there'll be a Starbucks coffee flavor of it, you know? So, you know, I just, that's how it works. And I, you know, I accept that. And I take it as a part of the ecosystem and that it's good. And that it's ultimately a good thing because, you know, it's, anything that's about freedom of self-expression, that's getting people to think about sex and to think positively about sex, I'm all for it, you know? So I get people talking to me sometimes who are like, don't you hate Valentine's Day? I'm like, why would I hate Valentine's Day when it is the one day of the year when it is okay for totally mainstream people to express their emotions and talk about love and sexuality? You know, and they're like, oh.
It is a good point. It's a very busy time for those of us who work anywhere near the sex industry. Valentine's Day, very busy for us.
And I, like, I understand over-commercialization ruins it and all that blah, blah, blah for some people. But, you know, but I'm okay with putting up Christmas lights if you're not a Christian, too. So, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm for all things for all people at all times.
Okay, well, that's a good sort of stopping point because now everyone knows, and anyone who's offended by that point of view can just stop listening. But really, we have a lot more to go. I want to dig into these books and talk about just how really good they are, people out there, and I know you're going to love them. But we got to take a break and hear from our fantastic sponsors. So do not go anywhere. More with author Cecilia Tan when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I forgot to tell you this last week, but I'm telling you now. I am having my very biggest sale of the year at puckerup.com. It's a back-to-school sale, and now through October 15th, you can get 50% off all of my sex ed movies. 50% off every single instructional movie I have ever made. Just use the coupon code SCHOOLME, which is S-C-H-O-O-L-M-E, all one word, school me at checkout. My guest today is author Cecilia Tan, and we are live talking about BDSM, erotica, romance, among other things. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788, or post your questions on our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio. Cecilia, one of the things I love about the first book in the Struck by Lightning series, Slow Surrender, is that the sex isn't just really hot and laced with dominance and submission, but it's also not typical hetero erotica. Uh-huh. I mean, was that deliberate on your part?
When you're going to go down a well-trod path, I mean, you always want to do it with some style and panache, I guess. I don't know. The reason the books got the names Slow Surrender, you know, Slow This, Slow That, I think is because it's such a gradual sort of evolution of their relationship and what they do. And mm-hmm. what I wanted to stay away from was sort of some of the kind of cliched things where, like, I didn't want the first thing that he did be to, you know, like, blindfold her and take her to a BDSM nightclub somewhere, you know, or something like that. And it's right. like, you know, I didn't want there to be a red room of pain, or he's going to open the trunk of the car and there's going to be, you know, a panoply of 200 sex toys in there or something like that. And it's just like, you know, I wanted to make it more clear that it's not about the toys or the clothes or the, you know, you have to buy the $200 moose hide flogger or, you know, something like that in order to be kinky, that, you know, it starts with just what he's carrying, what he can think. James is one of those imaginative doms where anything he sees can become a toy. Anything he says can become a part of a scene, you know, that sort of a thing. And so that, you know, that initially there's no whips or chains, literally, you know, is one of those things where we don't get to see James's quote unquote dungeon until the third book, you know? So, and then, you know, it's very definitely not a red room of pain, you know, it's very, you know, it's a private space, but it's not, you know, it's not what you expect, but that's part of the whole point is that, you know, doms, subs, lovers, whoever are never exactly what you expect, because if they were, you know, there wouldn't be anything to discover, right? There wouldn't mm-hmm. be anything to fall in love with. So,
but it's almost like in these sex scenes, you stick close enough to the script for it to feel familiar, but then you inject some pretty amazing non-heteronormative stuff in there.
That's true. I'm wondering
how you managed to slip that by, because this is published by a very mainstream publisher.
Yes, that's true. Well, what's interesting is that, I mean, I had some conversations with my editor where I said, I understand that I basically need to have to appeal to the widest audience in the romance genre. You know, people are expecting white heterosexual male hero, white heterosexual female protagonist, you know, heroine, they're supposed to be, he's always supposed to be taller, older, but not too much older because that's creepy, you know, et cetera. There's all these rules in romance that, like, for it to fit the genre, it has to be this, you know, kind of a thing. And I thought, okay, if I have to do that, though, I said, can I have every other character in the entire thing be either a person of color or bisexual, trans, you know, gay, et cetera? And my editor was like, of course. Sure, go ahead, you know. Well, okay, she didn't say of course. She said I'll let you know if it seems like the book feels too weird or too much like Sesame Street or the, you know, the Starship Enterprise, like we'll have one Chinese and one gay and one, you know, whatever. I mean, right. Like I didn't want it to come across like that, obviously. And she said, I'll tell you if it feels like, you know, you've gone too far and made it into like an issues book when really it's supposed to be a fun, erotic, you know, exploration, right?
Yeah, I mean, and also it's set in New York City, so right. to right. me, like, the racial diversity is just right. like, well, yeah, this takes place in New York City.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is one of the reasons I placed it in New York, too, is that I thought, you know, it's going to be a place where, and the one thing I feel a little bit bad about is that there is both bisexual and trans invisibility in the book, because our main character, being sort of an ingenue in, you know, the sort of wider world of sexuality, doesn't even recognize some of the cues that are given, but I think readers will. I mean, readers who are savvy will, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, but yeah, it's not like someone walks up to her and is like, oh, and by the way, did you realize that I am trans? You know, so,
right.
you know, that kind of stuff. And then the thing is, I mean, it's not, I don't, this is one of those things that's like an open secret, I guess. I mean, that I made James a bisexual hero. It's just, it doesn't, the word bisexual is never used, you know. And
so that was deliberate to sort of just ease them into it.
Yeah, that was very deliberate. And there are numerous times where he or someone else talks about like an ex of his or this or that and doesn't specify the gender of the person they're talking about. And, you know, our heroine and probably a large portion of the readers are just going to assume that all the exes are female. you know, so, but I'm like, that's just not realistic for someone who's in theater and, you know, the performing arts and, you know, rock and roll and art. And, you know, what are all these worlds that he lives in, you know, that, yeah, I was like, I cannot make my billionaire hero a securities trader on Wall Street or something. I was just like, you know, no.
And then he'd have to be a sub anyway. To stereotype for all you security traders out there. I mean, a joke.
Yes. The thing that annoys me about some romance, not all, obviously, much of the genre is really, really well written, but sometimes it's like the setups are very flimsy. And I feel like they sometimes are like, you know, and they give them these occupations. Like, and he's you know, such and such, and she's a this and that, you know, whatever. She's the editor of a fashion magazine on, you know, Madison Avenue or something. And then never once in the whole rest of the book does she actually have to go to the office or, you know, do anything.
And she has so much free time, which is like not an editor at a magazine. Exactly. Doesn't have any free time.
Exactly. You know, that kind of a thing. Or, you know, or he's a veterinarian or something. But then it's never mentioned again except in the, you know, the one or two places where it, like, relates to the plot somehow, like he has an emergency. And so that there's a, you know, a plot twist because of that, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm just like, you know, which to me is just, you know, this is not only in the romance genre, by the way, this happens in a lot of popular fiction genres where it's like people feel like they have to, you know, whatever, or like, it's like kind of like giving them the names of their parents and then the parents just disappear into the background. Like, you know, like, oh, but you would never actually call them for advice or, you know, this, that, or the other, you know, and I'm like, no, call me crazy. I want to write three-dimensional people who have full lives, not just full sex lives, you know? So,
okay. And speaking of full sex lives, the other thing that really strikes me is, although there's plenty of kind of grab your sheets sex scenes, they're so well crafted. And they're also, I mean, for lack of a better word, realistic. Like, no one's having an orgasm 1 minute into a scene or like climaxing from a feather against the nipples. And as a sex educator reading this, I couldn't help but really notice that you didn't take this easy route. And in some ways, you almost even burst the fantasy bubble with some real physical realities about sex. And in the first book, you turn one of those realities into an incredibly playful game that sort of postpones intercourse and it's really hot. But in the process, you know, you really subvert this very typical way that sex is represented, which is they fall into each other's arms, they fit together perfectly, they know exactly how to touch one another, and it's like right. perfect. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you consciously subvert that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a having been, you know, sort of BDSM educator myself for, you know, 2 decades, there's always that sort of urge to, you know, to turn things into a little bit of a how-to. And what I tried to do with this book was I did not want it to come across as a how-to in any way, shape, or form. I wanted people to be able to enjoy it as fiction, you know, to be able to just sink into the world and just flip through the pages, you know, having orgasm after orgasm if that's what they like. But I couldn't make it go so far into just the realm of fantasy for the sake of sort of the arousal of the reader that, you know, honestly, I think there being conflict and them having to struggle and having to figure out how they fit together. Like, that's a classic romance thing, is them having to figure out how they fit together emotionally. Like, what are their hot buttons? And, you know, it always, of course, leads to a terrible misunderstanding and, you know, so forth. And I said, but can you do that actually physically, erotically, you know, as they learn what each other likes or dislikes? I mean, one of the early reviewers basically blew my mind by saying, well, the secret to this book is that it isn't about the sub learning what the dom likes. It's about the sub learning what the sub likes. Mm. You know, and I'm like, yes. You know?
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, it's very centered around this main character, Karina, uh-huh. and her pleasure. And in fact, it really represents dominance and submission in a way that rings true for me, where the dom is doing a lot to cater to the bottom or the submissive. I mean, right. dude barely takes his clothes off like 100 pages into the first book.
Right.
Exactly. Like, his dick is like not even in the equation.
Right. And she's wondering, because every relationship or, you know, fling she's had prior to this has been all about him getting off, you know, and she's like, this guy is really different, you know, because his whole thing is that, you know, he could get his dick sucked 20 times a day if that's what he wanted, you know, with just snapping his fingers. It's much more interesting to, you know, be intrigued by this, you know, this woman who basically meets by chance and, you know, find out all the things that are interesting about her so that he can play diabolical, you know, sex games with her. They just get more diabolical the more he knows about her, you know.
Right.
So, you know. And the whole thing of he's into BDSM because he really, really likes it, not because he's like damaged as a child or, you know, some or whatever, you know, that kind of a thing. It's like he accepts that this is part of what floats his boat and that, you know, these sort of intricate games of power play between them and, you know, identity and role playing and all that are really his thing, and that, you know, he's just going to embrace that and keep coming up with things. So, you know.
Well, that's another good point that I want to expand on, about kind of how BDSM is portrayed. But we've got to take another break and hear from our great sponsors, including Good Vibrations, my presenting sponsor. Good Vibrations, they're so, so cool. And you need to so, so go to their website right now. Right now, they're having this great Fall into Pleasure sale now through September 29th. You can save up to 25% off. And then if you're listening to this and it is way after that time, you can always anytime use the coupon code Tristan for 15% off your order. Stay with us. We're talking about BDSM and there will be a lot more with Cecilia Tan when we come back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than 3 decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at 6 retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Sport Sheets is the sex toy company that's been keeping couples connected for over 20 years. Their fantasy restraint and sex toy products redefine sexual adventure. From bondage and sexual positioning to strap-ons and role play, Sport Sheets makes a toy for everyone's taste and budget. So go treat yourself to something from Sport Sheets, available wherever great sex products are sold.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We're talking today with author Cecilia Tan, and we're talking about one of her latest projects, which is a BDSM romance trilogy, Struck by Lightning, which includes the novels Slow Surrender, Slow Seduction, and Slow Satisfaction. And before the break, Cecilia, let me remind you that you guys can call us and talk to us. Do you have anything to say on this topic? I'm sure you do. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788, or post questions to our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio. Okay, so you brought this up before the break, and I want to talk about it more in depth, which is you are kinky yourself. You have been a part of BDSM communities and organizations for a very long time, and also in a very visible way. I mean, you've been an activist.
Yes, definitely.
And so going into this, did you feel a responsibility to depict BDSM in a more realistic or even educational way?
I definitely wanted to portray it more realistically. I mean, just that whole idea that, for example, you get more into it, not less into it as time goes on, as you and your partner build up your trust and so forth. And also tried to portray there's a lot of different ways of doing it, that there's not just one way that works. So when they eventually get to sort of meeting other people who are also kinky, our main character starts to realize that there are some couples who have been together for decades. There are other people who, are sort of social butterflies, et cetera, et cetera, that there's all these different ways of doing it, and that it's just like there's many different ways to just have a marriage or have a relationship, So that was a big piece of it. I mean, if you want to go into the how the personal is political kind of thing, I mean, there was the fact that I saw not just 50 Shades, but a lot of sort of books being written, many of which are well written, but that are from people who are not in the lifestyle themselves. And I felt like that was a little bit, I don't want to say it was cultural appropriation, because I think that maybe that's a little too glib for what it is, that real actual cultural appropriation is taking place, in different areas. But I don't know, just... But it would be like if there was a fad for, and there were, a literary fad for, imagine books about the Philippines or something, but all being written by, white middle-class housewives in the United States, who are exoticizing this, this place that they've never been,
And not just exoticizing, getting it wrong in many cases. Yeah. I mean, this is the greatest example of this, which I've seen on television and in print, is when someone appears who is wearing a collar that says master or mistress.
Right. And you're like, what?
And you're like, this is, no, uh-huh. no.
Yeah.
You've gotten this entirely wrong.
Right. Right, exactly. And so much of what I wanted to portray, like I said, wasn't the clothes or the toys or whatever. I wanted to portray the dynamic between people, because I felt like that's something that I can speak to, that somebody who hasn't lived the lifestyle or hasn't, been in those situations themselves might not be able to research as easily. I mean, it's kind of cool that what's happened is there's a whole I mean, I have a whole cohort now of romance writers, many of whom are not personally kinky, or they're, you know, they're sort of kinky enough in their own minds, but the choices they've made in their lives are to be, you know, more vanilla. But they are doing their research, a lot of them. I mean, this is the kind of cool thing, is that they're seeking out people on FetLife that they can interview and talk with. And, you know, and of course, the BDSM community being who we are, we're like, yeah, come down to the dungeon, you know, come to the spanking class. You don't have to participate. You can just take notes, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of a thing. It's been great. I went to some romance writer conventions this year and met a lot of people who are just like, you know, oh, you know, it's so fantastic. Just the community has welcomed us with open arms. And I said, of course we are. We're that part of how the information is going to propagate is that more and more people are going to be writing about it. At least they can be writing about sort of some true things and some true dangers too, you know? That there's plenty of, you don't have to just make it all up from scratch. You can go out and research, you know, in the same way that you would research if you were going to, I don't know, set a romance novel in Florence, Italy, but you can't fly over there, you know, on your meager writer's budget, you know? So yeah, you're going to research, right? And writers love research. So,
well, but I was very conscious reading it that there were some kind of teachable moments, yeah, which sounds very not sexy, but I mean, as you know, as the main heroine is sort of exposed to more people who are into kink, like when she right. goes to the BDSM ball. Right. I've never been to a BDSM ball, but I would go to one. And there are these moments where he can explain things to her or how right. things work or what right. she's seeing.
Right.
And they were accurate depictions. Right. And I mm-hmm. felt like, okay, so if anyone is going to try to do this at home, at least we've got some really accurate information about how people negotiate, what they do, what's safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I felt like it wasn't necessary to make that the focus of every scene. I mean, in the same way that just safe sex overall, it's like, it's not like in the middle of every sex scene in a regular vanilla romance, we're going to have a whole paragraph about what brand of condom it is and, you know, how she puts it on, you know, or something like that. I mean, it's like, you know, even if maybe you just need to have a mention in there so that there's the consciousness that either they're practicing safe sex or that they've made the decision not to practice safe sex and why. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I've done that in some of my books too, where, you know, it isn't necessarily just all fluff and kittens and, you know, whatnot like that. And like, this is the one true way or something. I mean, there's sometimes they make bad decisions, but it's always, I always try to make it clear to the reader later, either why that decision was bad or why maybe they got away with it, but they probably won't do it again, you know, because there needs to be some thrill and some pushing of the envelope, you know, and whatnot. I mean, that's part of what's thrilling about it, you know, so. Yeah.
And also, you know, it's a fantasy novel because James can put one condom on mm-hmm. and like an hour later, he's still hard with that condom right. on and then he can fuck. Exactly. I'm like, oh, look at this. He's a uh-huh. porn star.
Yeah, it's that, or then there are some things that happen where she's blindfolded, where you can't tell that what he's had to actually do.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
That's exactly how it works in a real BDSM scene where you're like, you know, oh, damn it, I need to do such and such. Okay, quick, I'll blindfold the bottom, and then they won't know that I have to
run
dig
out.
Through this bag to do this other thing, or, you know, whatever. Of course, they do know, kind of, but, you know, yeah.
No, exactly. The blindfold is an exceptional tool for tops because yeah, you could be like fumbling around and questioning yourself and practicing on a stuffed animal before you hit them and they will right. never know. They'll be like, oh, they're building suspense.
Right, exactly.
They're trying to tease me. It's all about the anticipation. I mean, they can make exactly. up their own like narrative in their head.
Well, this is the kind of cool thing is that this happens both between the writer and the reader and between, you know, partners in BDSM is that we each have an idea in our heads of how it's going to go. And then, you know, it's how those two ideas kind of mix together that makes the actual experience, you know, I mean, why the experience of reading a book is different for each person. So, you know, yes, there is a very kind of dom sub relationship in a way between the writer and the reader, you know, where it's like, you know, yeah, I'm going to put you through all kinds of wrenching emotional things and, you know, erotic things and, you know, so forth and so on. But I kind of have promised you by the, you know, the social contract of a book is that I mean, in a romance novel, is certainly that we're going to have a happy ending. In the case of the trilogy, of course, you have to wait all the way to the end of the third book.
I was just going to say, we're going to have a cliffhanger and be desperately trying. But now this is good because all three of the books are out. So this is a total sort of like binge watch, binge read kind of thing. It's much less torturous if you can literally download the next book the minute you finish the first one. You know, that just seems like that's gratifying to me in a way
I swear the reason that James has such a delayed gratification kink is because it's like part of the DNA of writing a series that's going to have cliffhangers in it. It's like, I just knew, I was like, I have to appeal to the reader for whom this is good for them, like that they get off on this and they enjoy the fact that they have to wait. So I'm going to have a lot of delayed gratification kink in this. I mean, I didn't consciously think that while I was writing it, but after I was done, I was like, that's obviously what I was doing.
Yes. So for people who haven't read any of the series, okay, they're total beginners, what do you think they should know most about this series?
What should they know most about it? That's a good question. I mean, I feel like the part of the point of it is that you should be able to go into it without knowing anything, that just like the heroine who has no idea what she's getting herself into, but, you know, it sort of gradually figures a lot of things out as each step takes her further and further, you know? So, I mean, kind of all I want people to know is that, you know, it's all going to work out in the end, but, you know.
But it's going to take a little while to get there.
But it's going to take a while to get there, and we're going to go a lot of interesting places along the way, including, you know, London, Las Vegas, Ohio, et cetera. I don't know. I
think she's a more empowered heroine. I mean, first of all, she kind of like knows her way around her own clitoris, which you cannot say about Anastasia.
Right.
You really can't in 50 Shades. So, but she feels even the stuff she doesn't know, it feels like she is learning and like self-aware and it doesn't feel, you know, I feel like one of the tricky things about 50 Shades was it was not crystal clear that everything was consensual.
Right.
It wasn't. And that's like a huge problem for real kinky people.
Yeah.
And this like doesn't go there at all. I mean, it's totally 100%. And and that way we can just sort of go with her.
Right. Someone once said to me that my real kink is boundaries, and that, you know, what toy they're using or what role playing they're doing or whatever doesn't matter to me. And that it's always about the boundaries and then where they shift. Because of course, I mean, you know, the SM 101 lesson is like, oh, well, everybody would just set their boundaries and there would be like a checklist and you could just say, okay, I'll do this, 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 but I won't do that,
right.
You know, and no one will ever cross that line. And it's like, well, actually it's the things that are on like the, well, maybe I would try that. Those of course are the catnip for any dom.
and also I would say, you know, there's a very distinct scene with Riding Crop. I don't want to give these things away, people, but where I feel like he's like, we could go to this place, but if this feels like too much, we won't go there.
Right. Right.
And so she kind of has an out and, and there are some ways that she feels safer doing it than, you know, it just feels like there's negotiation on the fly, which is, again, also realistic.
Right, exactly. And that negotiation isn't this thing that you just do before the scene and then, you know, and then it's sort of over, like a prenuptial agreement or something. Like, that just isn't how it works.
No, it's happening in real time and they've got to figure it out and everyone's got to be paying attention.
Exactly. The big lesson that I want people to take from it ultimately is not that negotiation doesn't happen just before the relationship or whatever in BDSM. That's true in all relationships. You know, not just kinky ones, that where the boundaries are between you and your partner and what you do together and the way you identify with each other and whatnot are going to be changing as time goes on and as you learn more about each other and as stuff happens. I mean, you know, whatever, things happen from that are outside of your control with your jobs or your families or whatever, you know, that kind of a thing. And that negotiation is constant. A reader wrote to me recently and said, basically, I didn't learn how to manage my boundaries from your book. I learned that boundaries exist.
Oh, you know? Wow.
You know, so, and I said, that is kind of my point, that it's almost like people kind of grow up. And I said, that's part of what Karina, the main character, learns, is that she's got, you know, like with her mother and her sister, I won't give away too much of what's going on in the book, but it's like her mother wants her to be a certain way and to live her life a certain way and, you know, so forth and so on. And it's like the sister has kind of escaped out from under the mother's thumb somewhat because the sister is a bull dyke, you know, and is basically like clearly so outside of the mold that the mom wanted for her daughters, you know, kind of a thing, that it falls on the younger daughter, you know, on our main character to be the femme one and to be the one who, you know, whatever. And it's just, it takes a while for our own, you know, part of the growing up process that's happening now in her mid 20s is her finally realizing you don't have to listen to everything your mother says. Your mother doesn't in fact own you, you know, and so forth. And that part of that is that you have to make your mother understand that she doesn't own you, you know,
right.
And that, you know, and that's something that some people maybe it's a conversation they never get to have or they never have, you know. So I said, for me, that was wish fulfillment for some readers, I think, who have never been able to say no to their mother or, you know, whatever. And they just live their lives hoping she doesn't call or that she doesn't get on Facebook and friend them, you know, seriously. So, and that this isn't just about your dom and your sub, but about sort of human empowerment and, you know, sort of the search for happiness in a more general sort of way. And that BDSM can be the tool through which you learn about your own boundaries, but then you start seeing it everywhere. And you're like, hey, you know, my boss really kind of bosses me around and asks me to do things that really are not part of my deal, right? So mm-hmm. What do I do? You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, you see people getting taken advantage of all the time. And some of them, not because they said, no, don't do that, but because they never said no. Or, you know, never felt they had the ability or the right to, you know, so I don't know.
But one of the things that I think is most brilliant about this book is that it works on a number of levels. Like it works on a superficial level as a kind of a hot, kinky, bodice ripping erotica right. novel, romance. But then thrown in the mix, if you care to delve a little deeper, if you care to read the subtext, if you care to like make your own conclusions about some things or pick up some clues, mm-hmm. it feels like there are some very radical ideas about gender. There are radical ideas about sexuality. There, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like you snuck it into this package, which just looks like pretty pearls.
Right.
But dig a little deeper, mm-hmm. and you've got a lot to say.
Well, and it should go down smooth. I mean, that's part of the point. It should be totally seductive. People should just be able to start reading it like, oh, I'm just going to read a light, fun thing. And if that's all the brain power they want to put into it, great. They're going to get a great series of fantastic sex scenes and, you know, character development and all that kind of thing. And it'll take them on a fantastic journey. But then, yeah, exactly. There's the things that are hidden in there. And some of them are just, I think it's just the fabric of how I live my life. It just gets in there naturally, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like something about being a sex activist for so long and, you know, I don't know, feminist, whatever, you know, liberal, whatever label you want to put on it. Just sort of, you know, everything I do, everything I write. To me, it has to be part of making the world a better place by my definition of a better place. So, you know, if that's not in there somewhere, then like, why did I bother? Kind of a thing.
You have definitely accomplished that. And also a sexy jerk-off story, which is just brilliant. Yes. You know, it's like works. It works always.
Exactly.
Okay, we need to take our final break. This is your last time to call people, and I don't know where you are. I think you're being shy. 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Coming up in the final segment, we are going to delve into your questions, which luckily you've also emailed me, and there's a couple really good ones that I think are perfect for this particular guest. And if you hear your question, email me your mailing address and you're going to win a prize from Sportsheets. So, prize is coming up, people. Don't go anywhere.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We've been talking about the BDSM romance trilogy Struck by Lightning by author Cecilia Tan. And now is the time when we take your questions. And so I picked some questions that you guys have sent to me that I think are particularly appropriate for this guest. And I'm hoping, Cecilia, you'll chime in with some advice.
Sure.
So this one comes by email from Chloe. She says, I've been interested in BDSM for the past couple years, and I've done plenty of research on the topic by myself. I've always enjoyed engaging in rough sex, but recently my partner and I have begun to explore some heavier elements, and I would like to establish a formal dominant-submissive dynamic. Do you have any advice on how I can negotiate the terms of a BDSM agreement with my partner and how to get involved in the local community? I'm only 18 and I'm very new to practicing kink, though it's something I've been interested in for a while. He is also very new to all of this, and he hadn't even really heard of BDSM until I brought it up. It seems as though I should take the lead, but I don't feel equipped to do so. Also, as a submissive, I feel odd directing the discussion. I'm feeling very inexperienced and would love some guidance.
Mm-hmm. Well, the great thing about doing the research now while you're young is that you don't suddenly wake up in your mid-40s with with your kids in junior high and high school searching your porn collection, trying to figure out what's up with mom. Figuring it out now is definitely the... definitely the wiser course, but as a submissive, I think we get very into our mindset of, well, but I'm not supposed to be the one in charge and, you know, so forth. But I think I try to say, think of it more like a stage production, where if you're going to negotiate with another person to play, and this includes your main partner, I would say, don't try to negotiate the whole relationship first. Try to negotiate just scene first, and do it the way you would pre-production for a scene on the stage. And only you're the principal actor, and he's the actual director. Say you're the playwright, and he's the director. So you both have in creative input to it. But then once the scene starts, the director is the one who says this, that, the other, right? So that's one way of thinking of it. That the playwright and the director, or the movie script writer and the director have forms of power and input into what goes on, but it's expressed differently. So that's one way to think of it. The submissive has equal power. It's just you express it differently.
Yeah, I feel like I would chime in and say that I don't think it's strange at all if a submissive asserts themselves
no.
and sort of either hits on someone or initiates the discussion and says, hey, these are the things I'm thinking of, and these are the things that turn me on. And I would encourage you to also kind of give your partner time and space to find his or her, I forget if he's a he or she, their own sort of inner dominant. Because I think we also have these fantasies about exactly how we want to be dominated. And when presented with that, that can be a little scary for people. Mm. I think it's much better if you say, I'm into these things. I want to try these things. This is what it turns me on about it. And then have your partner kind of search inside themselves for like, okay, how am I going to access this piece of the puzzle? I feel like it makes it more organic than you saying, I want it exactly like this. Because then they feel like, do I even have like a part in this besides acting it out?
Right. I try to put it in a vanilla context. I sometimes tell people, it's like telling your partner, I want to have a surprise party. You know, I want you to throw a surprise party for me. But then you don't want to give them a checklist of 10 things that must happen at your surprise party. Because then it will not be a surprise. Right.
But you do have to say a couple people who absolutely can't be there, can't right. be invited,
yeah.
And some food that you definitely don't want. I mean, there's like some basic, you know, exactly. guidelines.
And some people will be able to run with that, and other people will be like, no, actually, you do need to give me more guidance. So, you know.
Well, it was just recently Bisexual Visibility Day, and we got a question yeah. from a listener asking if bisexual is anti-trans or anti-queer because the term suggests a gender binary. This person says they don't feel like they can identify as queer or even pansexual. They like identifying as bisexual, but does no one like that term anymore?
I think people who are trying to nitpick bisexual to say that as if somehow people who chose the word bisexual to name ourselves are because we're somehow supporting the gender binary I've spent too much time on the internet and it's spent too much time picking apart words and have not spent enough time in the real world out there fighting for queer, gender, bisexual, lesbian, gay, et cetera, rights. And those of us who have been out here for 25 years writing for it are, I think, if I sound a little angry, it's maybe because I am. You know, seriously, people, you know, many of us chose the word bisexual because it was the only word at the time that wasn't specifically lesbian or gay or one of the big binary boxes. It was the only word that meant we're somewhere in between these two binary poles. It recognizes that the poles exist, but it doesn't support them. So there's
great answer. Okay. Cecilia, thanks so much for being on the show. Let me tell everyone again, Cecilia Tan is the author of the BDSM romance trilogy Struck by Lightning, which includes Slow Surrender, Slow Seduction, and Slow Satisfaction, published by Hachette. Find out more at ceciliatan.com or on Twitter at Cecilia Tan. As usual, you can find all these links on sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett, Matt, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of the show. And until then, keep that discussion going on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, on Facebook, but not for much longer, people. And in your own life, take some time to talk about sex. Out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.